Fanning. Weekends on 2FM.
They came from all 50 states. Out of some sense of patriotic duty.
It's so much more than just rallying for President Trump. It's really rallying for our way of life. The American dream against fake news.
To protest an election they believed had been stolen.
We're here, patriots. We're in Washington, D.C. Capitol building dead in front of us.
Their day of action would be January 6th. When Congress would count electoral ballots and ratify the 2020 election results. For some, it was just a rally for their president. For others, it was a call to arms.
Now, you just heard Malachy Brown there, a Limerick native and senior producer with the New York Times, where he and his team have pioneered a new form of visual journalism which couldn't be more relevant to the times we live in. He joined us in 2020 to tell us about the type of journalism that he and his visual investigations team do, piecing together the timeline of events using open source information. Since then, we've seen a tumultuous election in the US, the fallout from which came to a head in January of this year when supporters of Donald Trump descended on the US Capitol and caused a riot. Last week, Malachy and his team released their latest investigation. It's called Day of Rage, How Trump Supporters Took the US Capitol. And it's a full timeline and breakdown of how the riots occurred. And Malachy is back with us now on the programme. So thanks a million, Malachy, for being here. First things first, I want to say, if you're going to watch one documentary this year, it's only a half, well, it's 40 minutes actually. Watch Day of Rage, How Trump Supporters Took the US Capitol. It is phenomenal. So first of all, congratulations on the work that you've done. Painstaking, I'm sure. I'll get to that part of it and just how it all came together, etc. When I do, but like the very start, there's a nighttime kind of scene. But they go on to a bus, and the bus is a bunch of people coming to the Capitol to just sort of lend their support. Number one to Donald Trump, but number two to make it look as though they're not happy with what's going on. And they're good, normal, honest to God people. We are patriots, as they say all the time. And they want to, you know, come for the ratifying of the 2020 results. And they want to say, well, we don't actually agree with all of this. But they are good, normal, honest to God American patriotic people, aren't they?
Yeah, that's right. The vast majority of the crowd there were Trump supporters who bought the lie that had been sold post-election that the result was stolen by the Democrats and that Trump was the rightful winner of the election. And January 6th was pegged as their opportunity to protest that and to try to, you know, force Congress to deny the ratification of that result.
Yeah. Now, for some, therefore, it was just a rally for their president. But for others, as you say in the documentary, it was a call to arms. I mean, beforehand, there were over a million mentions on social media in the weeks beforehand. Maps were shared, weapons and ammunition, discussions over, you know, which kind of, I don't know, lawmakers should be targeted first. There was a lot of warnings that January 6th was going to be a little bit more than some sort of people sitting in their couches at home might have thought it might be.
Yeah, definitely. You know, there were groups, but also individuals who really saw this, as you said yourself, as their patriotic duty to defend democracy, you know, their way of life, that, you know, America was changing and that the election had been stolen and saw it as a revolution. You know, but one thing that's striking to us in the footage and anybody who watches it is the number of people who came prepared for violence. You know, in DC in the days beforehand, the authorities had warned that anybody who was carrying a handgun would be arrested. But people came, like hundreds of people came with body armor, with helmets, goggles, gas masks, bear spray, pepper spray, hockey sticks, knives, crutches, you know, whatever. Baseball bats, whatever they could use as weapons, and prepared for violence to take on the Capitol Police and to storm the building. And that's what you saw unfold. You saw some pockets of more organized Trump supporters and you know, far right groups who have a history of street violence. And then you had a cohort of what we kind of refer to as radicalized normies, just normal Trump supporters who were there you know, and whipped up into this frenzy of many hundreds of people.
And it makes for an amazing mix. And some of the stuff in this thing is really quite powerful and very shocking too. I mean, you forensically analysed thousands of videos, most filmed by the writers themselves, by the way. I'll get to that later. But I mean, you know, internal police radio stuff, body cam footage. You had to go to court to get certain stuff out as well. Was it difficult to get all this stuff together? Or was it that you had so much stuff, it was difficult to put it into 40 minutes?
Yeah, it was... it was a bit of both, but we had so much material. Like, it was the most documented attempt at an insurrection that we've ever seen. Yeah. You know, it was, you know, the videos ran into the thousands. Entire platforms like Parler were taken offline, but we managed to archive those videos, the public videos beforehand. And as you say, like, even though the rioters were attacking members of the press there, they documented almost every second of this thing from multiple different angles. And it did take us months to map all of that out, where every video was taken, what time different things were happening. But the result is this panoramic view of how the whole thing unfolded and the sort of domino effect that took hold.
Well, then tell me what it is that you do again, because we had this last time when you were on. But just like, we're talking about the New York Times Visual Investigations Unit. And what you do is you make quick documentaries, brilliant documentaries about newsworthy items.
Yeah, like our team makes use of sort of the huge amount of evidence that exists out there now online, like cell phone videos, security videos, satellite imagery, even satellite heat sensors can tip us off to like scorched earth policy in the Tigray, for instance, or things like that. Police scanners and audio analysis, ship and plane trackers. There's all of this. There's this wealth of information out there that allows us to investigate events and use hard facts then to show something happened and like either call bullshit on a government explanation about something or just clear away the fog of a chaotic event like the Capitol riot.
Okay, now this is the Capitol. This is Washington, D.C. And people are scratching their heads as to how this could possibly have happened and how so easily it would seem that the barriers could be broken down, the place could be taken over, which it most certainly was. The police leaders failed to heed the warnings. That's one thing. And the first question there is, why do you think? And they put rank and file officers in danger. Why did they do that?
There were a couple of things that were happening at the time. The authorities in D.C., you've got the Capitol Police who protect the Capitol building, and you've got the Metro Police, and then you've got sort of the National Guard and other federal agencies. And they came under heavy criticism in 2020 for their response to Black Lives Matter protests, you know, using helicopters to intimidate protesters and what have you. And so there was a decision that they were going to have a sort of, a lighter presence and not to antagonize protesters and all the rest of it. But yet they were warned several times, even weeks beforehand, and again on the night beforehand, that there could be trouble here. And they were offered extra support from federal agencies. They declined that. It was a fear of the bad optics of doing so. They failed to recruit. They had, you know, I think 1,200 officers on duty that day, but they could have recruited another 1,200 from their own police force. And what you saw on the outskirts of this perimeter was extended, all right, around the Capitol, but it was very lightly manned, and none of the officers had crowd control equipment or, you know, protective gear on, and they were very easily overrun by this, the mob.
And have many questions been asked since about how in the name of God could the US government be so compromised so easily, which it most definitely was. I mean, there's one scene you see one guy four times asking, really like very together, for help, for some kind of backup. No response at all. I mean, like, it's just really weird.
It is very weird. There have been investigations. People have lost their jobs. In fact, the Capitol Police leaders weren't present there on the day. And the guy you're talking about is a Metro inspector who's now since become a commander. He's one of the first group of backup police that arrived to help shore up the Capitol Police. And as you say, he's doing his best to tame the mob. He's using the munitions that they have. But the Capitol Police aren't responding. They're completely at sea. And there have been investigations. And what they found, basically, Dave, is that they weren't prepared for, they hadn't been trained, didn't have the right equipment for a riot like this.
Even like, okay, and then 150 cops were injured. There were deaths as well. I'll get to that too. But the National Guard, finally, 3 hours later.
Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah. I know. Again, it was the change. Previously, the Capitol Police would were able to call upon the National Guard, but the Pentagon said no. You know, basically, the top level officials in the Pentagon need to approve deployment. But the National Guard were ready. They were 20 minutes away.
But the Pentagon officials delayed that decision to deploy.
They did. They did for hours. Yeah.
By the way, just like, you know, it is fascinating and really is so well worth looking at. You can see it there on YouTube, the New York Times Day of Rage, how Trump supporters took the US Capitol. And we're talking to Malachy Brown. Now, Malachy, just to go to pass the whole thing before I go back in there to the madness of it all. It's so like weird. You feel you're right there on the front line. The aftermath is as divisive as the lie that launched it. Republican lawmakers have tried to normalize it with denials and conspiracy theories and all this. Basically, like, this is one of the biggest things that's ever happened in terms of, you know, on the ground in America. Like, obviously with the Civil War, you go to the 9/11, you have a thing afterwards, you check it all out, etc. An independent investigation. But Republican leaders have blocked an independent investigation. This tells me that this is going to happen again.
Yeah, hopefully not, but I mean, definitely.
But something like this.
Something like this could happen again. You know, I mean, the same forces are there, the same conspiracy theories, the same disinformation, and what you're seeing now is a complete attempt to whitewash what happened. And to not have, you know, as you say, the proper investigations. There have been some police investigations, and of course, you know, the second impeachment of Donald Trump. But there's a lot more evidence that's there that we couldn't even get our hands on, that we know is there, that could be released as part of an investigation. You know, it's political brinkmanship at this stage. You know.
Okay, well then, like, regardless of whether all these people are still as organized as they were beforehand, I mean, something is going to happen again, because there was a lot of call for violence there. You have the Oath Keepers, very organized, body armor, talking on radios and walkie talkies, and you single them out brilliantly as they walk through the crowd and exactly how they do it, particularly the bits where they walk up the steps and they're all holding on to each other as though they are, like, in, you know, in a Vietnam movie or something. It's like, this is where these guys have, plenty of them have fought before in places not in America. And then we also, of course, had, you know, all the far right nationalists and the Proud Boys. And you had President Trump during one of the debates on television telling them his words, a call to action. Was it a call to action, do you think? Stand back and stand by?
You know, the Stop the Steal was registered before Trump was elected president. So they were, you know, they were set up and ready to call foul whenever he lost. And what happened over the course of his presidency is that a lot of these groups grew, gained a foothold, were accepted and excused by Trump by his divisive language. And, you know, they're white supremacists. As I said, they have a history of street violence as well. And, you know, I think even the leader of the Proud Boys, when Trump said in a presidential debate, stand back and stand by, he posted on social media, standing by Mr. President, you know. So even the QAnon movement, you know, his refusal to disavow them as conspiracy theorists, they saw that as validation of, you know, Trump working with Q, who they believe is sort of a high-ranking security official in the Trump administration. So he uses this for political gain and has used it.
These other groups use, I mean, I started by talking about the people on the bus on the way there, who are basically good, if horrendously misguided and lied to, a bunch of American citizens who love their country. And, you know, you see them pledging allegiance to the flag and the Constitution, ironically, on their way to protest against it. Anyway, point is that, like, you know, when you have the Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys and the weirder parts of QAnon, which is weird enough anyway, because, you know, Satan worshipping, blood drinking pedos that the Democrats are and all this kind of stuff. But when you have all of them, and then they're able to join up with these basically good bunch of people I'm talking about as well. Isn't it a brilliant front for these guys to move with them and to kind of lead them into madness?
What you see is that those groups, the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers and some other radicalized individuals who instigate violence. Yeah. And then, you know, that makes it okay, and others join in, and then suddenly the police are overrun. And what you see then throughout it is that there's violence on the west side, you know, one group then storms around the east side, and many hundreds of people have been standing peacefully in the east side, but once they see a crowd break through the whole east side then folds, and they're up smashing in windows and doors within minutes. Another thing that you see in this is that these are folks who say they back the blue. They're urging the police.
Yeah, you're the same as us. And next time we're here, I hope you'll join us, all this kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And throughout the day that happens, there's conversation for a couple of minutes, a few jostling and but then there's a melee and the police are you know.
And show brilliantly in a kind of a graphic of the many simultaneous points of attack, the eight breaches and all the rest of it. But you also show somebody getting shot dead on camera. Did the delay to secure Congress, in other words, to let them get out a back door, if you like, just a few minutes too late, do you think that caused a riot or her life?
We think in our analysis it's a contributing factor. There was a lockdown called as soon as rioters broke into the building, and that was at 2:13 p.m. And that means get everybody out of the Houses of Congress. At the Senate, the rioters were at the Senate's doors within 2 minutes. Now, the building is large. It's like three GAA pitches long, more than that.
Yeah.
And over in the House, they decided, okay, we'll get rid of take Nancy Pelosi and Steny Hoyer, who's a political leader, out, but we'll continue proceedings. And they kept going for another, I think it was 17 minutes before, and at that stage, there were hundreds of rioters outside clamoring to get in. And they saw the lawmakers then evacuating and became incensed. And that's what led to Ashley Babbitt trying to vault through the window to reach those lawmakers.
Do you think the rioters believed that they were deputized by Trump to stop a crime, like something in an old Western?
Yeah, you could see that through the language of the day. You know, my president sent me here. Yeah. They're invoking 77.
This is our building. Yeah.
This is our building, our house. There's all of this defending the Constitution language that you see. And it's parroting exactly what Trump and his supporters had been saying over on mainstream media for the months beforehand, almost verbatim. So unquestionably, they felt at every moment that they had all the right on their side to do what they were doing. And the proof is there as well, in the fact that they were documenting it and proud of it as well.
Well, I'm amazed that there isn't an independent investigation. And frankly, we now have one. Day of Rage, how Trump supporters took the US. Took the US Capitol. I mean, there it is. It's there in 40 minutes, isn't it? It's like some guy said it was like people on holiday.
It was Andrew Clyde, who was he's a congressman who was inside the House chamber, who was sheltering from the rioters, helping to barricade the doors so they couldn't get in. And he said, "Yeah, if you didn't see the footage from that day, you would think it was just a normal tourist visit."
Right, but having seen the footage, he changes his mind, does he?
No.
Yeah, that's the point I'm making. I mean, when you have people like that leading it off, when there isn't an investigation, I just can't believe it. Take one person who comes out of this very well, and he really was. And what a surname he's got, Officer Goodman. Tell me about him.
Officer Goodman was at the in the middle of the building at 2:13 when the first rioters broke into the building. And if you can picture two stories, they break in on the ground level and they take to the left and head towards the Senate. Directly in the hallway over their heads, Goodman is sprinting to overtake them. And he runs down a set of stairs and holds them off. And he knows he's got backup arriving upstairs. Now, meanwhile, the Senate has been called into recess. And so they're evacuating down an escape route, which is right behind the rioters.
Yeah.
And Goodman recognizes this. He just holds them briefly while the other officers gather upstairs. And then he pushes one rioter and lures the whole crowd of them up the stairs.
The other direction. Yeah.
The other direction, away from the Senate and into the line of police.
Actually, funny thing is that, like, you also show, just speaking of stairs, there's a makeshift bunch of stairs outside for the inauguration of Joe Biden, which is going to take place in a few days' time. And that was very handy for the people who broke in, because they could just climb up that very quickly and get to a second floor.
That's right. It was like some of the scenes were like something from something that you'd see in some sort of medieval siege.
Game of Thrones or something.
Game of Thrones or something like that. But people scaling the scaffolding, getting up on top of it. they gave us great panoramic views from their cell phones, actually, of what was going on.
Well, now, hold on that note, and that's what I want to finish there, because this was the most online insurrection ever. Do you think the people who participated might have learned lessons about being so open? And is it better that it's out in the open rather than planned secretly?
I think people definitely have learned lessons, and they've taken down a lot of their online posts or made them private. Whereas before, they were encouraged and felt okay, you know, saying what they were saying or documenting what they were documenting, and felt that it was within their right to do so. Afterwards, they realized, oh, the FBI are coming for us, and they took a lot of that stuff offline. So, I mean, I think the, you know, I would worry about intelligence agencies surveilling people, and I don't know how they got access to the information that they did, but, you know, they have sort of ignored the potential for domestic terrorism in the US for a long time. And I think that's no longer the case. So who knows where. I think conversations like these will continue in chat rooms and various platforms online. The authorities are taking action against anybody who entered the Capitol. You know, there's some people who were continuing to report on who played a minimal role in that day, but are looking at many years in prison.
Right, indeed. Well, listen, congratulations, Malachy. It's absolutely, like, compelling stuff. I really do urge people to take a look at it. It's 40 minutes long. It's up there on YouTube. It's called Day of Rage: How Trump Supporters Took the US Capitol, from the New York Times Visual Investigations Unit. Thanks so much, Malachy, for talking to us on the programme again.
Thanks, Dave.
Dave Fanning, weekends on 2FM.